Thanks, Dorothy. And I think the kids can be released. Morning, everyone. So I recently read a sermon by Martin Luther King Jr. It's actually the first of his sermons that I ever read. It's entitled, A Tough Mind and a Tender Heart. And it resonated with me. Maybe some of you have read it or heard it as well. It was clear that I could learn a lot from his words, and so I'd like to share some adapted parts of the sermon with you, along with my own thoughts today. So Dr. King starts out, a French philosopher said, "No man is strong unless he bears within his character antitheses strongly marked. A strong person holds a living blend of strongly marked opposites. Not ordinarily do people achieve this balance of opposites. The idealists are not usually realistic, and the realists are not usually idealistic. The militant are not generally known to be passive, nor the passive to be militant. Seldom are the humble self-assertive, or the self-assertive humble. But life at its best is a creative synthesis of opposites in fruitful harmony." The philosopher Hegel said that truth is found neither in the thesis nor the antithesis, but in an emergent synthesis that reconciles the two. And Jesus recognized this need for blending opposites. He knew that his disciples would face a difficult and hostile world, where they would confront the recalcitrance of political officials and the intransigence of the protectors of the old order. He knew that they would meet cold and arrogant people whose hearts had been hardened by the long winter of traditionalism. So he said to them, as Sebastian read, "Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves." And he gave them a formula for action. "Be ye therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves." It's pretty difficult to imagine someone having the characteristics of a serpent and a dove simultaneously, but this is what Jesus expects. We must combine the toughness of the serpent and the softness of the dove, a tough mind and a tender heart. So to give a story from my own life, I've been trying to strike this balance since it's been resonating in my mind, trying to be kind and gentle while standing up for something I believe in or standing up for myself. And it hasn't been easy. No surprise there. But recently, I had a colleague bring up a comment that she appreciated my stubborn, calm style. And I think it was meant as a compliment. So it's not quite the two qualities that I'm aiming for, that I'd like to be known for, but it's a step in the right direction, trying to hold two things that are different. But hopefully, it's a step towards the wisdom and gentleness that we're called for. But it seemed relevant. So Dr. King continues with a focus first on the need for a tough mind, characterized by incisive thinking, realistic appraisal, and decisive judgment. He says, "The tough mind is sharp and penetrating, breaking through the crust of legends and myths, and sifting the true from the false. The tough-minded individual is astute and discerning. They have a strong, austere quality that makes for firmness of purpose and solidness of commitment." So who doubts that this toughness of mind is one of man's greatest needs? Rarely do we find people who willingly engage in hard, solid thinking. There's almost a universal quest for easy answers and half-baked solutions. He says, "Nothing pains some people more than having to think." And he continues to speak on soft-mindedness, seen in how influenced we are by advertisements and also the tendency of, when we read, to accept the printed word and press as final truth. That our channels of information, the press, platform, and in many instances, the pulpit, do not give us objective and unbiased truth. Few people have the toughness of mind to judge critically and to discern the true from the false, the fact from the fiction. Our minds are constantly being invaded by legions of half-truths, prejudices, and false facts, One of the great needs of mankind is to be lifted above the morass of false propaganda. So Dr. King has some strong words that also ring true for us today, don't they? Clearly, his words are from more than 50 years ago, but are a healthy warning for us today. And I'm not going to go into discussion of echo chambers and fake news, but just to suffice it to say that we still have our work cut out for us to discern truth and find balanced viewpoints. So to continue, he says, the soft-minded person always fears change. They feel security in the status quo and have an almost morbid fear of the new. For them, the greatest pain is the pain of a new idea. The soft-minded person always wants to freeze the moment and hold life in the gripping yoke of sameness. Soft-mindedness often invades religion. This is why religion has sometimes rejected new truth with a dogmatic passion. Through inquisitions and excommunications, the church has attempted to prorogue truth and place an impenetrable stone wall in the path of the truth seeker. Some criticism of the Bible is considered by the soft-minded as blasphemous, and reason is often looked upon as an exercise of a corrupt faculty. Soft-minded persons seem to have revised the Beatitudes to read, "Blessed are the pure in ignorance, for they shall see God." There's also been widespread belief that there's a conflict between science and religion, but this is not true. There may be a conflict between soft-minded religionists and tough-minded scientists, but not between science and religion. Science investigates, religion interprets. Science deals mainly with facts, religion deals mainly with values. The two are complementary. So we don't need to look too far to detect the dangers of soft-mindedness. Dictators capitalizing on soft-mindedness have led men and women to acts of barbarity and terror that are unthinkable in civilized society. There's little hope for us until we become tough-minded enough to break loose from the shackles of prejudice, half-truths, and downright ignorance. The shape of the world today does not permit us the luxury of soft-mindedness. But, he continues, we must not stop with the cultivation of a tough mind. The gospel also demands a tender heart, right? Tough-mindedness without tender-heartedness is cold and detached, leaving one's life in a perpetual winter devoid of the warmth of spring and the gentle heat of summer. What's more tragic than to see a person who has risen to the disciplined heights of tough-mindedness, but has at the same time sunk into the passionless depths of hard-heartedness? The hard-hearted person engages in a crass utilitarianism that values other people mainly according to their usefulness. The hard-hearted person lacks the capacity for genuine compassion. They are unmoved by the pains and afflictions of their brothers and sisters. They may pass unfortunate men and women every day and never really see them. They may give dollars to a worthwhile charity, but they might not be giving of their spirit. A hard-hearted individual doesn't see people as people. They depersonalize life. And Jesus frequently illustrated the characteristics of the hard-hearted in parables. For example, the rich fool was condemned not because he was not tough-minded, but rather because he was not tender-hearted. Life for him was a mirror in which he saw only himself and not a window through which he saw other selves. Jesus reminds us that the good life combines the toughness of the serpent and the tenderness of the dove. To have serpent-like qualities, devoid of dove-like qualities, is to be passionless, mean, and selfish. But to have dove-like qualities without serpent-like qualities is to be sentimental, anemic, and aimless. So we have to combine the two, combining strongly marked antitheses. So as you know, Dr. King is known for nonviolent resistance and in the fight for civil rights. And we can learn from his efforts for positive changes that you pursue also today. Through nonviolent resistance, he says, you'll be able to oppose an unjust system and at the same time love the perpetrators of the system. It's a high call. We can work passionately and unrelentingly, but may it never be said that to gain good things we used inferior methods of falsehood, malice, hate, or violence. So how does this all connect to the nature of God? Dr. King continues that the greatness of our God lies in the fact that he's both tough-minded and tender-hearted. The Bible, clear in stressing both attributes of God, expresses his tough-mindedness in his justice and his tender-heartedness in his love and grace. He does not leave us alone in our struggles. We can be thankful that we worship a God who's both tough-minded and tender-hearted rather than one extreme or the other, that he doesn't leave us alone in our struggles. Rather, he seeks us in dark places and suffers with us and for us as we struggle. He offers us the hope and power of Jesus' resurrection. At times, we need to know that he's the Lord of justice, the God of justice. But there are also times when we need to know that God possesses love and mercy. When we're facing adversity and disappointment, we need to know that there is someone who loves us, cares for us, understands us, and will give us another chance. We can be thankful that our God combines in his nature a creative synthesis of love and justice, and we continue to learn to do the same. One more verse that we can focus on this morning is from 1 Corinthians, right? Love is patient, love is kind. We're called to love as God loves us. Love is not weak or passive, even though it's patient and kind. We're called to be stewards, to strive for positive changes in the world, to care for those in need. So we need the strength and wisdom of love and kindness to do this work. We need a tough mind and a tender heart. And if that seems difficult, I hope you're encouraged to keep trying and keep praying about it, knowing that you're not alone in the effort and that Jesus himself understood this tension of blending opposites. I think we'll take some time for open worship now, and Dorothy will close.